You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday the 9th of February 2022 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, we've got a small bit of good news to begin the show with today. In Britain, they have finally made age verification a legal requirement for sites which provide pornography. Obviously, this is good. I mean, probably most kids will manage to get around it, but a certain number of them will have problems with actually getting hold of a credit card to prove that they are over the age of 18. This is good. Pornography is so damaging for innocent eyes to see, and the internet is full of it, and it is basically meant that men are distracted all the time. I mean, we have hardcore pornography on the internet and we have soft pornography everywhere else in the adverts, on the television, and men are just distracted all the time by it. And they're having their emotions manipulated by it. And I think it's a large reason why people are not so concerned with the way that society is going. We know from Dr. E. Michael Jones' research that pornography has been used as a weapon, particularly when Israel went into the Lebanon, and I believe when they went into Palestine, they took over the TV station and began broadcasting pornography into people's homes. So it was used as a weapon. It's described as a freedom of speech, bizarrely enough, but it's obscenity. Obscenity is not freedom of speech, and it's highly damaging. So this is good news. Unfortunately, it's part of a bill which also seeks to censor websites and censor streaming services for producing criticism of certain government policies, which they describe as preventing incitement to hate, of course. But we'll have to see how that goes along. But at least they have done something good here and made it slightly harder for children to view pornography. Moving on, we have a rather interesting news story here from America about President Biden providing crack pipes to drug addicts. Of course, this is clickbait, but it does bring up some interesting issues, I think. President Biden's Health and Human Services Department is finalizing funding to dole out crack pipes to drug addicts as part of its harm reduction plan. The $30 million grant program, which accepted applications until Monday and will begin doling out money in May, intends to provide funds to nonprofits and local governments to make drug use safer and to advance racial equity. Now, how could racial equity come into this? Well, we do see a difference between the races in the sort of illegal drugs that they like to take. White people tend to lean more towards opiates, things like heroin, fentanyl, and black people tend to lean towards crack cocaine. And both of these types of drugs are used in different ways. Heroin, most people end up using syringes, and for crack, people end up using pipes. And for quite some time now, syringes have been available under harm reduction programs because syringes, when these drug addicts share them, they can end up sharing hepatitis, all sorts of other diseases, and it's just trying to make it safer. But of course, it's mainly white people that use heroin. So white people have been given some way to try and minimize the harm. And I guess what they're saying here is that because white people have been given syringes, black people should be given crack pipes as well. But I don't really see how crack pipes can cause disease. I mean, the drug itself is going to be causing a lot more harm than maybe catching a cold that you might catch from sharing the pipe around. But it is interesting that they are effectively pointing out to a difference between the races here by suggesting this, that it will advance racial equity to give crack pipes to black people. Included in the grant is money to purchase safe smoking kits and supplies. A spokesperson for HHS told the Washington Free Beacon that included in these kits could be pipes for users to smoke substances like crack cocaine and crystal methamphetamine or any illicit substance. HHS said that the kits will serve to limit the risk of infection. Typically, users smoke out of glass pipes, which can lead to cuts and sores that become infected with diseases like hepatitis C. Well, how else are they going to do it? What are the government going to provide instead of glass? I mean, surely they're still going to be able to harm themselves with the glass pipe. I think really the way to deal with this, and it's hard to say whether this really should be the way to deal with it, but if you look back in the past, cocaine used to be available in toothpaste, it used to be available in Coca-Cola, and I can remember some years back, coca farmers in Peru had been put forward for, I think it may have been a Nobel Peace Prize, for producing a tea that was made out of coca. And you could drink the tea and you effectively got the stimulation from the cocaine in the tea. And apparently this is completely legal in Peru and Colombia, but it's not legal throughout the rest of the world. And I think because of the price of illegal drugs, people end up trying to get use them as cheaply as possible, so and to get as much of a hit as they can from them. So they end up injecting heroin and they end up smoking crack cocaine. Would it not be better to make a safer version of the substance available? I mean, back then in the 1920s, I don't think we had a cocaine epidemic. I don't think we had all these drug problems. Similarly, if they were to prescribe morphine or diamorphine to heroin addicts, then there would be no need for them to inject, so they wouldn't be harming themselves like that. But better than that, I mean, the reason why people end up getting addicted to these substances in the first place is because they get introduced to them by somebody else. And the person that introduces them to them is usually somebody that cannot afford to maintain their own drug problem. So they seek to sell the drugs to somebody else to make a profit to pay for their own drug supply. So if the morphine or the diamorphine was provided, then they wouldn't need to be selling drugs to maintain it. And I don't think they would wish anybody else to become addicted or to become dependent. I mean, I don't think these drug dealers wish for people to become addicted. I think they just want to make money. They want to make profits. So if you were to take the profit out of this, I think it would be very limited, the number of people that actually became addicted. And then you've got the issue of dependence and addiction. And people become dependent, particularly upon opioids. And the only form that they've got that they can purchase the opioid is in an injectable form. And injecting things is the most surefire way to become addicted to something. Addiction is related to how quickly a drug takes its effect. This is why people become addicted to crack cocaine more so than they become addicted to normal cocaine, or more so that they become addicted to coca tea, is because the effect is instant when they smoke it. And it's the same with injections. Injections are instant because these heroin addicts inject it straight into their veins. So they become addicted to this instant buzz that they get from the drug. If the drug was provided in a form where they didn't get that instant hit from it, but it did prevent them from suffering from withdrawal symptoms, say in an oral preparation that they could take once or twice a day, they wouldn't be getting the withdrawal. They would have the dependence taken care of, and then they would just have to concentrate on solving the addiction problem and realize that they didn't need to keep injecting because they already had enough of the drug within their system, and then you could wean them off of the injecting and wean them off of the dangerous side of it, because that is the most dangerous side of it, I believe, is the injecting. That's what causes the overdoses. That's what causes the spread of disease through the sharing of the needles and the injecting of poisons into the blood. So by making it illegal, we've actually created this addiction problem. Because addiction is where somebody has to keep redosing after they've already taken a dose. Before they need to take another dose, they're taking another one because they're chasing this high. When you look at medically prescribed opioids, anybody that takes them for more than a few days, I think, becomes dependent upon them. But only a very small number actually become addicted to them. And by that, I mean only a small number end up taking more of it than they should do, and end up taking extra doses straight after taking the first one. And that's what a true addiction is when people cannot control the amount that they take. And this is exacerbated by the fact that the only form of the drug available to these junkies is an injectable form. And of course, the drug dealers at the top, they think that's great because it means that they sell more of the product. It only becomes an addiction when it becomes problem use. If it's medicine that's actually been provided. I mean, over here in Britain, people get prescribed codeine, and they become dependent upon it, but they may not be addicted to it. The addiction is if it becomes problem use, and if people are taking another dose straight after they've taken the first dose, then it becomes addiction. And when you define addiction like that, as in taking more than you should be taking, then it only becomes a very, very small portion of people that actually do become addicted to these substances. And if you were to be providing, say you were to be providing oral morphine to people that were addicted to heroin, which is diamorphine, you would then be able to slowly taper that down until they came off the drug itself. They would no longer be injecting. There would no longer be a need for them to sell their drugs in order to maintain their own drug use, and they may well be able to go out and get a job, and they certainly wouldn't be needing to go out and steal and rob in order to pay for their habit. I mean, it's only been, I think, about 100 years, possibly something like that, that we have made these drugs illegal, and effectively we've taken them out of the hands of doctors and chemists and put them into the hands of gangsters. And there is a multi-billion dollar industry there that goes into the hands of these gangsters. And we've seen the crime that has resulted because of it. So that's an argument for legalizing these things. And of course, there is also the argument against, which is that it would appear that these substances are being condoned if they are legalized and if they are provided. If they are provided, it means perhaps that there will be more of them about, and people are more likely to come across them possibly and to start taking them. But again, I don't think anybody that becomes addicted to these substances, I don't think they would wish that upon anybody else. I think they would say to people, well, this is the last thing that you would want to do. The last thing you would want to do is become addicted. Then, of course, with this doing this halfway thing where what they do is they say, well, we'll provide safe places for people to inject, and we'll provide safe paraphernalia for them at these places, then that acts as a magnet to these addicts who are having to steal to pay for their addiction, or they're having to sell drugs to pay for their addiction. And it basically ruins the area where this safe house is. So these sort of half measures where they make the paraphernalia safer really, really have a lot more negative effects, I think, than if they were to be just providing the drugs to the people that are dependent on them and getting their addictions under control and providing the drugs in a much safer form. So heroin would be provided in an oral form of morphine or some other opioid, which is similar to what they do. They do prescribe people methadone, but apparently that is not a good enough substitute for the diamorphine. That's why people end up still taking heroin when they're taking methadone. And perhaps they could provide cocaine in a much safer form to the people that are addicted to crack, perhaps in this form of tea that they use in Colombia. I don't know. I mean, maybe that would not be strong enough for them, but surely they could make a stronger type of the tea, and then people could slowly taper themselves off the coca. I think this would limit the amount of crime. And perhaps because this discrepancy that there is between black people in particular being criminalized for their involvement in drugs, I think far more of them are arrested for selling drugs than any other people in America. I mean, that may be one of the reasons why they end up legalizing drugs more so than actually the health aspect. It may be this the racial differences that there are, which is of course why Biden here is handing out these crack pipes for free, because they see that this is going to advance the cause of racial equity. Handing out pipes is also intended to prompt users to smoke rather than inject themselves with some substances like meth, as injection is far riskier. Well, smoking is no good either. Surely what would be far preferable would be for them to have the pure substance in a form where it was long acting, so they didn't have to keep injecting themselves with it or have to keep taking it, which would basically get rid of the addiction aspect of it. I mean, if somebody was only having to take a pill once a day or twice a day, then that would get rid of the addiction aspect of it. They would then just become dependent on it. And the faster acting the substance is, the more likely somebody is to become addicted to it. Applicants for the program get priority if they serve undeserved communities, such as African Americans or Native Americans or LGBTQ people. Are they implying there that LGBTQ people are more likely to take drugs? I think they are, if we look at studies and surveys. And because LGBTQ people take amyl nitrates, for instance, that's the reason why amyl nitrate is legal. I can remember there was a big argument in the Houses of Commons about that when they were trying to make amyl nitrate illegal, and homosexual politicians said, well, this is a drug that gay people use. So, of course, they couldn't then make it illegal because it was something that a minority used. The crack cocaine epidemic starting in the 1980s disproportionately ravaged the black community. And again, that is because black people are a different ethnic group to whites. We haven't had any crack cocaine epidemics ravaging the white community. They ravaged the black community because black people on average have more of a liking for the drug than white people do. And it's the same thing with the opioid epidemic, which disproportionately ravaged the white community because white people have are more likely on average to end up using opioids. And last year we had a massive increase in the number of overdoses because of COVID, because of people being in lockdown. And we also have this huge problem with overdoses with this drug fentanyl, which is incredibly potent, far more potent than heroin is. And because it's much cheaper to produce than heroin, it gets mixed in with the heroin and people end up overdosing. I mean, a lot of these overdoses are caused because people don't know the strength of the drug that they are actually taking. And a lot of people might say, well, who cares about these junkies and these addicts anyway? They're just a burden on society. They tend to thieve and they tend to rob. Well, they're all related to somebody. They're all somebody's son or daughter. And if they did have medically provided drugs, then there's no reason for them to be robbing the community. There's no reason for them to be drug dealing. I do think it would limit the amount of crime that we see in our communities. Other harm reduction supplies that could be purchased with the grant money include testing equipment for sexually transmitted diseases, overdose reversal medication, medication lockboxes, syringes, and substance test kits. And again, the problem with that is that they will all be available in one particular area, and that will act as a magnet for the drug addicts to go to that area, and that area will have an increase in crime, and the people that live there will be really concerned about this. You know, these half measures, they really aren't going to solve the problem, I think. The grant programs last 3 years and include 25 awards of up to $400,000. It is against the law to sell or distribute drug paraphernalia, including such pipes, unless authorized by state, local, or federal law. So this is really the clickbait aspect of this. The government are going to be distributing drug paraphernalia. And people will look at that and say, well, that is almost encouraging it. Will it make it easier for somebody to take up crack smoking because they can get hold of a government-produced crack smoking pipe? Well, I'm not so sure, because they would have to find the place that was actually providing this, and I'm not so sure that they would be advertising it as such, and they would probably be giving it out to people that already have a problem. Perhaps they will be referred to such a place by their doctor. There were an estimated 100,306 drug overdose deaths in the 12-month period ending in April 21, according to the CDC, a 28.5% increase from just the year prior. Three quarters of those deaths involved opioids, many of them being synthetic opioids such as methamphetamine or fentanyl. And again, the majority of the people there that are dying will be white people. You don't see so many people dying of overdoses of crack cocaine, for instance. Cities like San Francisco and Seattle have experimented with their own crack pipe kit distribution programs. Others have backed away from such plans. Louisville, Kentucky, allowed convenience stores to sell drug kits before later banning them from doing so. I mean, it looks like there's all sorts of attempts here to do something about this problem, but none of them really seem to succeed. I think in Portugal, they decriminalized most drugs, but then drug use actually went up there. Meanwhile, the Justice Department signaled on Monday that it may allow safe injection sites to open up across the US. Such sites would be safe havens where drug users could use heroin and other narcotics freely without risking arrest in an environment monitored by health professionals. Again, but what about the people that live in that area where it's just going to become a magnet for these people to go to? If the drug was provided to these addicts in an oral form, then they could just be taking it at home and you wouldn't have this magnet there attracting people to go to this one particular area. The DOJ told the Associated Press it was evaluating such facilities and talking to regulators about the appropriate guardrails. Under the Trump administration, they had prosecutors who fought aggressively against a plan to open safe consumption sites in Philadelphia. Although we cannot comment on pending litigation, the department is evaluating supervised consumption sites, including discussions with state and local regulators about appropriate guardrails as part of an overall approach to harm reduction and public safety. A divided appeals court last year ruled that safe injection sites would violate a 1980s-era drug law aimed at crack houses. The Supreme Court in October declined to take up the case. About 6 weeks later, the first officially authorized safe injection sites opened in New York City. The two facilities, which the city calls overdose prevention centers, provide a monitored place for drug users to partake, with staffers and supplies on hand to reverse overdoses. And you really want to try and stop these people from injecting in the first place, which is, I believe, is what would happen if the drug they needed was provided to them in an oral form, and once they stabilized on that, the addiction would go, because they would be taking the amount that they needed once or twice a day. And then they could taper it down. I think this is the way that it used to be dealt with years ago. This is the way that it used to be dealt with in Britain. I think it was called the British method or the London method. And they stopped doing it in the 60s. And of course, since then, we've had a massive problem with people becoming addicted to heroin. Street heroin, basically, not what is produced by the drug industry. And of course, if they were to be doing this, then you would, if they were to be providing it medically, there would be a legal route for the produce that is produced in Afghanistan. And Afghanistan has no real products that it can produce. I think it has one of these rare metals that is used in batteries for smartphones, but that is about it. There is no crops that they can actually grow. What does grow there is the opium poppy, and it grows there very well, and they produce masses of opium every year. And if this industry was to be legalized and regulated and provided as a medicine for drug users legally, then they would have a legal route to actually sell their opium. I think they tried to do this some years back, and they said, look, why don't you buy our opium legally? And they refused to do that and said that they would rather make the morphine-related products from coal tar, because there is a way that you can synthesize opioids from coal tar. In actual fact, you can synthesize all sorts of medicines and chemicals from a starting base of coal tar. But of course, that then cuts out the Afghans from actually having a viable crop of something that they can sell. And I'm not sure how much more expensive it is to make it from coal tar. I mean, these drugs really aren't that expensive when provided by the medical industry, because they've been around for 100 years or so. It's not like new drugs that are created that have a copyright on them and a patent and have had lots of research done into them and cost thousands and millions of pounds of research done and development. They're drugs that have been around for so many years that there is no patent upon them. They're probably about as cheap to produce as paracetamol. And yet these drug addicts end up having to pay huge amounts of money for them, which just drives robbery, street robbery, and more people getting addicted as people are trying to sell them to fund their own habits. The New York City sites so far have intervened in more than 110 overdoses among more than 500 users, many of whom have made multiple visits, according to On Point New York City, the organization running them. However, critics say they are only encouraging drug use and burdening the surrounding communities. Well, I dare say it is only addicts that are going there. Occasional users would not want to be hanging out at a place like that. Perhaps people would go there if they are seeking to acquire drugs, because they know that there would be other drug users there. Again, this is the reason why these half measures, I don't think, will work. Senator Tom Cotton from Arkansas wrote, "Is this a cruel joke? Drug overdose deaths are at their highest recorded levels. The Biden administration should focus on stopping traffickers instead of creating more demand for their product." I don't think it is creating more demand for the product, but it will be encouraging some rather unsavory types to actually go to that area in New York City. So a bit of a clickbait title, but there is reasoning behind it, and we can see that the reasoning behind it is because there is a difference between the races. There is a racial disparity between the drug use of the races, just the same as there are different diseases that different races are more susceptible to. The different races, on average, are more likely to develop problems with different drugs. Well, I think we've got just about got enough time for another news story here, and this one comes from Britain, and it's basically about the indoctrination of children by teachers. A primary school has been slammed for getting kids to write angry letters blasting Boris Johnson. Tory MPs demanded teachers at Welbeck Primary School in Nottingham be sacked for using crucial classroom time to haul the Prime Minister over coals. Education Secretary Nadeem Zahawi also piled in to condemn party political promotion in lessons. The school had tweeted pictures of their Year 6 pupils writing to their local Labour MP about Partygate during lessons. The now-deleted post said Year 6 pupils have written to Lillian Greenwood regarding how angry they are with the Prime Minister for the allegations he broke lockdown rules and his continued lying to Parliament. Their trust in politicians has been damaged. And I doubt very much whether 10-year-olds have any concern about what is going on in politics. I certainly had no interest in what was going on in politics when I was 10 years old. This is quite clear that these children have been indoctrinated by a teacher that dislikes Boris Johnson. The media are trying to make as big a thing about this as possible when effectively all he's done is the equivalent of parking on a single yellow line. I mean, if the police had caught Boris Johnson breaking social distancing, he would have just been given a on-the-spot fine for that. And here this teacher says the pupils are angry about his continued lying to Parliament. Well, have these 10-year-olds been watching the discourse in the Houses of Commons? Do they sit there and watch Boris Johnson at the dispatch box? Of course they don't. And Boris Johnson apparently was not lying to Parliament. I mean, it's not possible for an honourable member to lie to Parliament. They have to take it back if they are lying to Parliament, apparently. So this is quite clearly a biased teacher. I mean, if you have a look at these letters, they've all been typed up as well. And I don't think these letters have even been written by these children. One letter claiming to be from a pupil no older than 10 read, "I am enraged, infuriated, I feel lied to, and that we desperately need a new leader. I feel that there is no reason to trust our government, and as a British citizen, the Prime Minister should resign. This letter is on behalf of my country." Yes, very, very believable that a 10-year-old would be writing something like that and be taking an interest in politics. Surely the 10-year-old would be more interested in video games and comics and movies and would have no interest in this or understanding of it. Labour MP Miss Greenwood said, "I understand and share their anger and will be writing to Boris Johnson asking him to respond to my young constituents' concerns." I mean, it really is like the left has no shame, do they? Using 10-year-olds for this and pretending that it was their own idea. The school claims the activity was part of the English curriculum and teachers were not forcing their views on the kids. But teacher turned Tory MP Brendan Clark-Smith was furious with the exercise and demanded that heads roll. He told The Sun, "This falls well below the basic standards that I would expect and I'm sure parents would also expect. In fact, if I had done this and then brought my school into disrepute with a subsequent tweet, and I would expect to be sacked. Children do not exist for the purpose of furthering people's personal political agendas, and we must not put words in their mouths." And this is very similar to the pictures that we've seen of young children marching around in their school classroom holding up placards proclaiming that Black Lives Matter. And teachers are supposed to be completely non-partisan in the way that they teach children, and they're not. They are indoctrinating them with all these left-wing ideas, all these harmful ideas, really, ideas that are harmful to the people group, particularly to the white people group, encouraging these children to be feminists and not have children, encouraging them to put the other ethnic groups first rather than their own ethnic group, which basically means that nobody will be putting white people first, and that will just result in white people dying out, won't it? The same as if the head of a household, instead of using his wages to provide for his family, he just donated all his wages to the family that lived in the next door house. I mean, that's how logical it is. These ideas that we are giving to children are suicidal in a lot of ways, encouraging them to march around proclaiming that another ethnic group's lives matter more to them than their own. I mean, it is just ludicrous. And of course, the Conservative Party aren't happy about this, but they've done nothing about the increase in left-wing ideas in universities all this time. As we so often say, they've been in power for 10 or 15 years, and all of this has happened under their watch. I mean, people are too frightened now to even express a conservative or traditionalist view at university, because they know that there will be a campaign to kick them out from the university if they do. So we should not be surprised that we now have teachers using children as pawns and proxies in their own war against what they see as a right-wing government. And it's absolutely incredible that anybody could see the Conservative Party as right-wing. There's no difference between them and the Labour Party. And we saw the evidence of this the other day when one of the Tory MPs just walked across the floor of the House of Commons in order to join Keir Starmer and the Labour Party. And that is because there is no real ideological difference between them. The only true opposition to the progressivism and leftism and suicidal ideas that our government are promoting is nationalism. The only true opposition and resistance to all the harmful things that we see going on today is the nationalist resistance. And if you want to become a part of that, then I do recommend that you join Patriotic Alternative, which you can do by just going to patrioticalternative.org.uk and writing to their email address and finding out where your local regional branch is, where you will meet other like-minded people who are concerned about the way that the country is going. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.